Mineşşeytanirracim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Elhamdülillahi Rabbil alemin. Ve salatu ve selamu ala seyyidina Muhammed ve alihi tahirin.
Allahümme salli ala Muhammed ve ali Muhammed.
So we've covered, so far we've covered all the way up to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. And continuing on from the era of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, in this particular handout, where it says four main sects after Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, peace be upon him. We have spoken about the second one, but we haven't spoken about the first one, Al-Nawusiyya. And the second was Al-Fatahiyya, and the third was Al-Shamatiyya with a ta'. And it's also been referred to as Al-Samatiyya with a sin. When we're speaking about the first sect, it's extinct, no need to mention it any further. The third sect is also extinct, and of course, the fourth sect is what we're going to be concentrating on for the first half of today's session, and that is the Ismailiyya. If we were to say, out of all of the different Shia sects that we have spoken about, the outstanding sect that is pretty much a sect that you would all be familiar with, you might know someone from it, is the Alawi sect. And then coming in second would be the Zaydis. I don't know if there is a Zaydi community here in Sydney. But with the Ismailis, it is a more predominant sect that expands over different areas in the Muslim world, from India to Africa. Here in Australia, there is a Jama'at Khana for the Ismailis. We did mention that Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam had 10 children, and the first of his children, his elder child, his name was Ismail. And Ismail passed away, according to what historians say, Ismail passed away 3 years prior to the Shahada of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. And there were people, because of how devout he was, how religious and spiritual and knowledgeable he was, people were under the assumption that seeing that he is the elder son of the Imam, he is entitled to imamah. And this is why the son or the grandson or the great-grandson of Ismail, Ibn al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, assumed that the imam was Ismail, that he went into ghaybah, and he is the legitimate imam. And this is why the Ismailis are sometimes referred to as the Seveners, because they believed in, from the 12 mainstream Shia imams, if we could say, they stopped with the sixth, went on to the seventh, and then from there onwards, there was a lineage of other imams. Now, Ismailis are similar to the Alawis in the sense that they also emphasize very much on the element of the esoteric language, and that's why we call them Batinis as well. And they emphasize also very much on the practice of Taqiyya, which means they are not allowed to disseminate, is that the right word? Disseminate their faith, their religion, their rituals, their beliefs publicly. So they have been called Seveners, they've been called Batinis, they've been called Ta'limis, they've been called the Da'wah, the Da'wahs, or the Summoners, those who summon. They themselves, at that time, were not called Ismailis. It was later on formulated as a name for them. So, seeing that Muhammad was the son of Ismail, who was in turn the elder son of Imam Sadiq. Muhammad had a son named Abdullah, and Abdullah had a son named Ahmed. These were the primary people who started to promote the view that Ismail was alive, he did not die, and he is the legitimate Imam. Now, there are narrations from the Ithna Ashari side that do say that Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, peace be upon him, while participating in the burial ceremony of his elder son Ismail, he kept on removing the cloak from the body of his dead son Ismail, and inviting people to come and see that this is the dead body, we are burying my elder son Ismail later on. We don't want any dramas to happen, but unfortunately it did. Now, because of the overall control of the Abbasi Khilafah and the Shia being persecuted, whether they were Alawis or Zaydis or Ismailis or any other kind of sect outside of those who the Abbasi Khulafa approved of, being persecution was also a part of why the Ismailis went into concealment for a very long time. Here, around about 150 years. Then there was the big divide that happened with the Ismailis, and they were, of course, following one leader after the other, one imam after the other in their own lineage, until the coming of the Khalifa called Imam al-Mustansir, who was the 8th Fatimi Khalifa and the 18th Ismaili Imam. The Fatimi dynasty was the first Shi'i dynasty that was started in the what is currently in today's world known as Tunis in North Africa, and the Fatimi dynasty was an Ismaili dynasty. And the 18th Ismaili Imam al-Mustansir, he had two sons. One son, the elder, his name was Nizar, and the second son, his name was Al-Musta'li. And each of these two sons, they claimed to be the next imam after Al-Mustansir. And this is why there was a very big schism, a big divide that happened after Al-Mustansir. Now, okay, so the Nizaris, and they later on came to be known in today's world as what we refer to, as what they refer themselves to, as the Agha Khanis. So in today's world, if we were to speed up everything, in today's world, there are two famous groups of Ismailis. You have the Buhras and you have the Agha Khanis. The Buhras are still very traditional. They have a lot of religious, spiritual practices. They're more into aspects of ziyara and keeping to their customs and things like that. You will see them in holy places like Karbala, visiting Imam Hussein and visiting Imam Ali in Najaf al-Ashraf. And they're very known by the way they dress. The men are usually dressed with white, and the women are dressed with two pieces of colored clothes in their hijab form. Whereas, as far as the Agha Khanis are concerned, or the Nizaris are concerned, they're very modern, open up to Western society. They don't have that practice of Islamic Sharia rituals and things like that in the sense of the Dawoodi Buhras or the Alawi Buhras or any of the other kind of Buhras. Now, interesting is that in the 19th century, the Iranian Shah gave the 46th Imam of the Nizari Ismailis the title of Aga Khan. And from then onwards, son after son, there were other Aga Khans. And today, there is the fourth living Aga Khan, who makes him the 49th present living Imam. 49th, is that right? 46, 47, 48. Outside of the Nizaris are the Musta'anis, and they followed the younger brother of Nizar, and they are divided into the Tayyibah, the Da'i Mutlaq leaders, and that further divided or extended into the Buhras, the Dawoodi Buhras, and the other kind of Buhras that exist. And then you have the Sulaymaniyah, and you have the Hafidhi. And interesting enough here is a lot of people ask about the Duruz, and what's the origin of the Duruz. Here, the view is that the Duruz initiates from the Ismaili ideology. Now, another view in reference to some of the beliefs of the Ismailis is they were highly influenced by the Ghulat, because the Ghulat also referred a lot to the Batini side of things, and this is why there are certain traces of early Ismailis revering and respecting the likes of Abu al-Khattab, who we've already spoken about being one of the leaders of the Ghulat. And then from the Ismailis you have the Qaramita, and there are a lot of dramas with the Qaramita, especially due to the fact that they attacked the Ka'bah al-Musharrafa, and they stole Al-Hajar al-Aswad from Al-Ka'bah al-Musharrafa at the time. And you can see that, for example, the Dawoodis, they're usually in the subcontinent, usually in Africa, whereas you have other kind of Ismailis who would live in Yemen, who live in Iran. And of course, when it does come to their places of worship, they don't call it a masjid, they call it a jama'at khana. Or they call it, what was the other name that I wrote down here somewhere? Or, jama'at khana. Anyway, what are their beliefs? The Mahdi is anyone who saves them from tyranny of the time. Maybe that might be the case, that they there was a confusion as far as who the Mahdi was. And that's why you can see that in the Fatimis, they believed that Abdullah al-Mahdi was the founder. And then there were others who continued to believe that the living present Imam is also the Mahdi as well. You know, they also have this, as we said, the emphasis on the Batini side. So, for example, with Hajj, you have the outer Hajj, the exoteric Hajj, the external Hajj, and that is you going to Mecca itself. But then there is the esoteric, the inner Hajj, and that is when you are blessed with the opportunity of visit, of seeing the living Imam, whether it be on the Aga Khani side or whether it be in the Dawoodi Buhra side. There's an emphasis on doing bay'ah to the living Imam, and that entitles you to be a part of the Jama'at Khana, or else you won't have that access to be a part of the community. There's also strong implementing of paying of your zakat to the living Imam, and it needs to go directly to the living Imam. Whatever earnings you have, it needs to go there. One tenth of whatever earnings you have must go to there. Different details that it has. Anyway, that's a very quick, brief explanation of the Ismailis. The detailed information that any one of us should try to refer to are their books, and there are many contemporary Ismaili scholars and also Ismaili institutes, like the Ismaili Institute that's in London, that do publish good quality English books that you're able to refer to. Of course, there are certain scholars in the history of Shia Islam where the Ismailis attribute them to themselves, like Khaja Nasir al-Din al-Tusi and Ibn Sina, whereas Twelver Shia scholars strongly believe that the likes of Khaja Nasir al-Din al-Tusi and also Ibn Sina were Ithna Ashari Imams, but under the control of the Ismaili government and power at the time, and that's why they were forced to live in that kind of way. The next, so I do encourage you all to do a little bit more reading about it, to try to get it from their books and not just statements being said about them from here and there. The next sect that we are going to speak about is the Waqifi sect, and they are extinct, but it did, similar to other sects that we have mentioned, it did create a lot of commotion at the time. So much so that it is said that up to 60 of the companions of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam became Waqifis. And al-Waqifi, waqafa, means to stop at. They stopped at the imamah of Imam Musa al-Kadhim and rejected the imamah of Imam Ali al-Ridha. And they were called al-Waqifa. Now there's the general meaning of al-Waqifa, and there is the specific theological meaning of al-Waqifa in reference to the Shia sects. The general meaning is whoever stopped at one of the other imams, they're referred to as Waqifa. The specific meaning is this particular group who stopped with the imamah of Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam. And they believed that he did not die and that he was the Mahdi, and nobody was appointed after him. And here there is the issue of how are we able to understand that so many of the companions of Imam al-Kadhim, peace be upon him, fell into the snare of the Waqifi group. Was it an issue of ideology? What argument did they have? In your readings, you'll be able to come to understand that it wasn't only a shubha, it wasn't only ideological misconception like you would see in reference to other sects, but it was similar to the Fatahis, it was similar to others, where it was mainly an issue of being tempted and enticed by financial gains, where these people took control of Baytul Maal and they were able to draw people into their group by giving them large sums of money. So that is in reference to the Waqifi sect, and you know, they're also extinct in, and they quickly came to extinction. We've mentioned on a few occasions now how we're able to see the very, very difficult, confusing time that the Shia lived in, and how many different sects and groups and factions existed at the time. How is a person able to decipher what is right and what from what is wrong? How are you able to be that confident enough that you are following the right path and others are on the wrong path? Why isn't it the case where people were going off to the Imam himself and asking him, what's the situation, what's the case? And this, of course, gives us that incentive that we really need to make sure that the ideology that we have, the belief system that we adhere to, the mentality that we are following is correct. And there always needs to be a time in our lives where we continue to ask ourselves the correct questions and quench the thirst of trying to get correct, valid answers as well, and not allow misconceptions to linger in our minds, because that will really turn into either skepticism and doubt and many other intellectual sicknesses that we have. And it's very easy for someone to be tricked into a certain ideology. And we've mentioned this a few times before, where, you know, they used very sly, cunning ways to attract people to their groups. And that's what cults do. And that's in today's society, in today's Shia world as well, we have people who are sucked into cults and deviant groups where a person might use certain slogans, they be the imam or the representative of the imam, or they be the Yamani, or they be of this character, or they use this kind of slogan. And people, unfortunately, if they don't have that strong, stable ideological foundation, they'll be drawn into this. And then easily brainwashed as well. So when it comes the time for you to sit down and have a nice, civilized conversation with them, the damage is done and it's impossible for you to get them out of that cult mentality that they have. And that's why we always need to refer ourselves to mainstream scholars, to or people of authority, and say, well, this is the view, this is the question, this is the misconception, this is the argument, what do you have to say about it? And then this is where things start to mature in our minds. So any wave that comes our way, it won't knock us down. We will be strong and stable and fixed. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, we said that there were all of these different groups. We didn't mention the Mubarakiyya, who believed that Ismail did die, and they believed in the imamah of Muhammad ibn Ismail. From Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, so carrying on from the time of Imam al-Sadiq, we have Imam al-Kadhim, peace be upon him, our seventh imam, and he had the issue of the Waqifiyya. And we have many ahadith from Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha alayhi salam, who curse those particular individuals who started to promote the Waqifi sect. And then there were the Ahmadiyya, and they believed in the imamah of Ahmad, the son of Musa al-Kadhim. Then from Imam al-Jawad, there were a small group of Shia who rejected the imamah of Imam Muhammad al-Jawad because they said he's too young. He is non-baligh, he's only 8 years old. How can we take him as the imam? So they rejected his imamah. And then there were others who believed in the imamah of Musa ibn Muhammad al-Mubarqa. From the time of Imam Ali al-Hadi, there are those who believed in the imamah of Muhammad ibn Ali being the Mahdi and also alive. Then there are those who believed in the imamah of Ja'far ibn Ali, and there are the Nusayris. We've already spoken about the Nusayris, and we did mention that there is a difference of view as to whether they came about during the time of Imam al-Hadi or Imam al-Jawad or Imam al-Askari. But for argument's sake, we just mentioned it here. Then there are those from the time of Imam al-Askari who rejected the Imam because they physically did not see the Imam's son. Yani, our 12th Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajallallahu ta'ala, farajahu sharif. So because they didn't see the 12th Imam, they rejected the 12th Imam, and they said that they stopped at Imam al-Askari. Then there are those who believed that Imam al-Askari was the Mahdi, and then there are those who followed Ja'far. Ja'far was one of the brothers of Imam al-Askari, the son of Imam Ali al-Hadi, and he, in the beginning of his life, he claimed to be the Imam, and they started to refer to him as Ja'far al-Kadhab, Ja'far the liar. However, according to authentic narrations, that we have towards the end of his life. He repented and he abandoned that belief that he had, and that's why they refer to him as Ja'far al-Tawwab, Ja'far the repenter, because of him repenting. This is pretty much all the way down to the 12th Imam. Inshallah, next week we will be speaking about 12 Shia. That will be the first half of our session. The second half is certain sects or ideological or theological groups that came about after the 12th Imam, or after 12 Shi'ism. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Muhammad wa alihi wa ta'ala.